I have long feared that my sins would return to visit me. And the cost is more than I can bear.
A past he wanted to forget.
I've been to war, and I have no desire to do so again. I have 7 children. I do not wish to leave them fatherless.
A family threatened by war.
We have to do something.
I forbid you to go!
My child!
You're my child!
A son fighting for his beliefs.
Father, I thought you were a man of principle.
When you have a family of your own, perhaps you'll understand.
When I have a family of my own, I won't hide behind them.
Hang him, put his body on display.
Colonel, I beg you, by the rules of war.
Would you like a lesson, sir, in the rules of war?
Or perhaps your children will.
Before this war is over, I'm going to kill you.
Why wait?
I'll come back. Might I request, sir, that you transfer my son here under my command? I'll fire first, to start with the officers.
We don't know when or where they're going to strike.
Where'd you learn all that riding, shooting?
My father taught. How many were there?
Maybe one.
One man. Sounds more like a ghost than a man.
This ghost, bring him to me.
How many men does Cornwallis have under his command?
12,000 redcoats.
I'm here to enlist every man willing. Who's with us?
This is not the conduct of a gentleman.
I'll take that as a compliment.
Hold these truths to be self-evident, and if you don't like it, I'm gonna stab your fucking horse with an American flag.
Oh my god, that was one of my big hoorah moments in this film.
I just remember it mainly because of the GIF, so that one didn't surprise me. But as you can see, I have my American flag bandana. Look at these stars on here. Okay,
yeah, it's a great flag, I'll give you that.
Does this trigger you, Brit?
I'm so triggered right now. Yes, I want to go out and buy a Union Jack right now.
God. All right, there I caught it. I have wheeze voice. I've been a little bit under the weather. This is the best I have sounded in days.
It's been a while since we've had a husky Brett voice.
It has been a bit, and this isn't too bad. It would have been a lot worse yesterday, I think, when we initially were supposed to record. I think we were supposed to record yesterday on the Tuesday. It is, well, when this comes out, more than likely, if you're listening to this right when it comes out, April 19th, and in honor of that, because it's History Month, and in honor of Lexington and Concord, the first shots of the American Revolution, where the British soldiers tried to go take weapons, and the Americans were like, no, this is where we draw the line, goddammit, our guns. And it fired off.
That was where it all started.
Where it started, Lexington and Concord. Been there, really cool little town there. American Revolutionary War. We are here for 2000s. The Patriots, or Braveheart 2.0, or Braveheart 2.
Yeah, very much so.
But he didn't
die. I know. At the end, surprised. I was like, wait, he got home? What?
As bad as this movie is historically, and as horrible as Braveheart was, at least he didn't have William Wallace survive.
True.
Like we talked about Michael Bay wanting the U.S. to win Pearl Harbor. Okay,
I love it so much. I just love that he was like, guys,
what if we win the battle?
What if we win?
No. It's like the whole point of like William Wallace dying also was like, no, the whole point is you take his body, but you never take his spirit, freedom. And we had Mel Gibson right in front of the army here at the end. And I'm just like, holy fuck, this is goddamn Braveheart.
It is Braveheart. And you know what? I have really enjoyed History Month. so far. I've learned a lot. And it's so funny because last week, randomly, someone brought up Pearl Harbor, the event. And I was like, yeah, I was like, hold on, I can be a part of this conversation because I know what I'm talking about. And I was able to answer. Someone was like, yeah. And then they like went to Tokyo. It's like some guy. And I was like, oh, you mean, I've forgotten it now. Doolittle.
Doolittle. There you go. Yeah.
I thought Doolittle. And then I was like, no, it's not That's Doolittle. Not Doolittle. It's not Doolittle, but it
Jimmy
is.
Jimmy Doolittle.
I was like, oh, you mean the Doolittle, the raid? And they're like, yeah, I do mean that. And I was like, oh, yeah, I know about that.
Yeah. Just casual knowledge, bro.
Yeah, I just know about, you know, Pearl Harbor. The
How did that
not
come
just
up?
Just the Hollywood movie.
How did that come up?
I don't remember.
What in the world could possibly have just randomly brought up Pearl Harbor?
I have no idea. I think you're talking about war in general, and then it went somehow brought that up.
Hey, look,
I would
me.
Love to.
I have a little podcast.
Actually, I do know about Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, you should be like, do you mean Doolittle's raid on Tokyo? Like, okay, nerd. Shut up, nerd.
So I'm hoping that for some reason tomorrow in work, the American Revolutionary War will be brought up. And I'll be like, oh, you mean that started on April 19th, 1775?
Yeah. On Friday, you can go into the office and be like, hey, remember when we took that big L? That 7-year-long L?
Yeah.
Yeah. What a just... a ridiculous war. It's such a weird thing, and we'll obviously get into it because just doing this little scant bit, a lot of my research quote came from, I took an American Revolutionary class in college. I still have some books, very dry. I got a C in there. Oh my God. It was a tough ass class. It was a 3000 level course, so a junior level class. So I went back and looked up at some of my papers. Some of the papers that I wrote back in, this would have been 2006, I guess. So that's where a lot of it comes from. Just a truly ridiculous war, but even more so, a goddamn ridiculous movie that we are here for.
Yeah.
But stick around to the end of this. Why did I keep saying stick around to the end of next week's episode? Stick around to the end for next week's episode. Brett, learn to read. And we will finish and wrap up History Month with a final historical movie, a Best Picture winner.
Oh, shit. Well, there's
a little clue. Stick around to the very end. Our Patreon episode this month is not historical at all. It's Get Him to the Greek. We did it because what feels like a fucking year ago is Diddy got raided for sex trafficking. Not a word has come out about it from this FBI raid, but a lot of bad men are in that, including some bad women, some bad people in there. So very timely one in there that is not historical related. Okay, I almost spilled the beans. Never mind, moving on.
Hey.
Email us podonthepath@gmail.com. Patreon.com/onthepath is where the Patreon episode is, Get Him to the Greek, as well as a bunch of other stuff on there, including first season of House of the Dragon, Hot D, which is coming back in, I think, 2 months from today.
June.
I think June 17th.
Yeah. Possibly. Yeah, it's definitely June. We've got a, I'm so excited for that. I've watched the series. The first series I think I've watched through probably 3 times now. I watched it on the way to Texas. Obviously, we watched it twice.
Yeah.
Pretty much for the, like, for the podcast. And then I watched 4 or 5 episodes on the way. Maybe it was Canada. On one of my long haul flights, anyway, I watched the whole series and it was just awesome.
Somewhere to a former place where y'all used to tyrant around, or tyrant, your tyranny. Although technically, Canada is still part of the Commonwealth. And technically, King Charles III is the head of state.
Still under our remit.
God, imagine in the 21st century, the new millennium. We still got all little kings and queens here.
Yes.
Queen consorts. Yeah.
It really should have been over when the queen popped her clogs.
Yeah. If only y'all had a Mel Gibson, or if only every place had a Mel Gibson to just kill as many English as possible, because goddamn, he hates the fucking English. Okay, let's get into it. But before, actually, let's get into the guess the gross here. Okay, so 2000, all right, budget $110 million. And I saw of this $110 million budget, $25 million went to Sir Mel Gibson.
Wow.
Turned down.
So he's a quarter of the film.
He is. This was turned down by Harrison Ford.
I saw that.
Yes.
Too violent or something.
Yes. Oh, you know, Mel Gibson's going to be like, oh, too violent? Hello.
Perfect. That's, I guess, yeah, Harrison Ford, I guess, hasn't been in that much super violent stuff. I can't imagine. I know he's done, he does lots of kills, but not as much swords, I guess.
Air Force One was one.
Was it? Maybe it's just because I imagine him in Star Wars and that's just like pew pew.
Yeah, the first one was like the most violent. But all right, year 2000, $110 million budget. What you think?
I feel like it probably did really well. I don't personally remember anything about this film. I only would have been 7 when it came out, so it wasn't on my radar at all. What did you say? It was 110?
Mm-hmm.
I think it probably was successful. I would say like 250 mil.
Not bad, not bad. 215 million.
Oh, okay.
So it didn't double the budget.
Oh.
But I think back then, I don't think you had to per se do that. And so not the biggest thing. I think that 2 hour and 53 or 2 hour and 55 minute runtime may have cut into a little bit. But yeah, not a bomb by any means, not a smashing success. There was no sequel. We didn't get to see him come back for War of 1812, where maybe he gets to stop the burning of Washington. But not too bad, not too bad right there. Now, I have a confession to make. As we get into the tomato meter, I flew too close to the sun.
No.
And I accidentally saw the critic meter for this. So I cannot wager a guess. So you viewers, get your guesses in or pause it right now as Lucy runs through it. So I know, I don't know the audience though. I did not see that though.
All right. Okay. So for the viewers or the listeners rather, this is what the critics had to say about The Patriot. They said, it's pretty short and sweet this time, to be honest. The Patriot can be entertaining to watch, but it relies too much on formula and melodrama.
Yeah, it is. It is very melodramatic.
It's I guess.
Yeah. So, all right. So what did it get?
The critics rated this at 62%.
62, which I can't even say of a guess I would have had. Like once I see it, I'm like,
you can't guess then.
I didn't think it was great and I didn't think it was terrible. So I don't know exactly what it would have been. I don't know that. But for the audience. I think it's going to be higher because it wasn't a bad movie. And like I said, the critics had it right there, which is like a little bit of a positive say. I'm going to say that the audience is going to have this at a 73%.
Oh, okay. The audience liked it a bit more than that. They had it at a lovely 81%.
USA. USA. Ooh. USA.
And it's from 250,000 Americans.
250,000. All right. I, as a 16-year-old, America-loving patriot, I did I liked this movie when I was younger. And I did realize, and another movie, like I said before in our Braveheart episode, that's what got me really into history, especially medieval history, is I already knew from Braveheart that a Mel Gibson historical movie, you got to do your own research.
Okay.
And I had to do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I actually haven't done much research into what was historically accurate and what wasn't.
I did.
It'd be more fun for me to guess.
Yeah.
And then you correct me and be absolutely gobsmacked.
I did, because there is one thing that happens in this movie. There was probably about 4 or 5 things that had me howling. There was one thing that had me screaming. And we will get to it. Okay. But before that, directed by Roland Emmerich, noted German. Okay. Oh. Independence Day is, I would say, his biggest movie. And we will definitely cover that. Maybe this Independence Day.
Yeah.
Yeah. His big one there. Godzilla 98 was a big one.
White House Down.
White House Down. I know you've seen that, right?
No, that's the one. Okay. So White House Down came out, I want to say, like the same year or the year after as another one called Olympus Has Fallen. And it's the same concept where the White House is attacked and the president's right-hand man has to protect him. And then the other one, it's Gerard Butler. That's the one I've seen.
Okay, so y'all hear that synopsis and y'all know what The Patriot is because you've seen and you're watching and you're listening to this, okay? He did that. He did 10,000 BC. He did The Day After Tomorrow. He did Godzilla.
Wow.
So he's done all of these brainless, stupid fucking movies, all right? In 2000, he also did the Independence Day sequel. In 2015, he did a movie called Stonewall. And I'm like, okay, hold up. When I hear Stonewall, I think of two things. One is Confederate General Thomas Jonathan Jackson, Stonewall Jackson, who got killed during the war. The other one is the Stonewall, like, bar or area, and the Stonewall riots that started, like, the gay liberation movement of New York City. And I'm like, there's no way Roland Emmerich would be true. Yeah, he was. It's about the fucking Stonewall riots, a coming of age story.
Oh, you, wow. Okay.
Roland Emmerich. Is it a shock that it grossed $290,000?
That's pretty impressive.
No, that is not impressive.
No?
$290,000, not million.
Oh, shit. Sorry.
Yes. $290,000.
I'm like, whoa. You're like, $290 million.
You're like, whoa, that's a lot of money for gay people. No, I'm kidding. No, $292,000. Okay.
Yeah, so, yes, that's not impressive.
Maybe don't have Roland Emmerich tell your gay coming of age story about the fucking Stonewall riots. Okay. Jeez. How about this, though? The writer of this stupid, shitty, melodramatic movie, Robert Rodat, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He wrote and was nominated for an Oscar for Best Original Screenplay for Saving Private Ryan. How do you write Saving Private Ryan, and then 2 years later, you have this shitstorm come out?
I actually noticed when I was on Rotten Tomatoes earlier today, Saving Private Ryan is one of the highest rating movies from the critics on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I don't know what it is, and I'm sure eventually we will do it, but I'm already going to guess that is a 99. Like, I don't think anything's 100 with that many. I'm like, that I'm going to guess that is a, if it's a 98 or 99, I'd almost bet my life on it. So this guy, he directed The Patriot and realized, like, oh, that's some shit. The next movie that he wrote, I should say wrote, if I said directed it, I meant wrote The Patriot. His next movie that he wrote or credited for was Thor: The Dark World, which I'm pretty sure that's the one that I see all Marvel fans say is the worst MCU movie.
Really? Okay. Yes. So that was actually 13 years after The Patriot as well. Man took some time off.
I'm sure he probably did like script doctoring and was paid a couple hundred thousand dollars to punch up or do something. I doubt he was just persona non grata for this. Maybe in England, maybe the United Kingdom or Great Britain, they're just like, oh, this motherfucker can't be touched for a decade. Okay.
He's not allowed back in.
And then they told Kenneth Branagh, hey, he's going to write the next story. He's like, nope, not me. Not going to happen.
The Dark World. Yeah, I mean, I'm not well-versed in MCU at all, so I
just
know which one it is.
I just always remember that one as being the one that almost everybody says is the worst one. It's always at the bottom of the rankings.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think a lot of the Thor ones tend to go at the bottom of people's lists.
Like the very boring one. Like the first one was Kenneth Branagh. I remember that one again. I haven't seen them, though, but I've heard that same thing. All right, let's get into this almost three-hour slugfest. So basically, this is not the story of like a citizen soldier and all that. To me, this is the story of a shitty carpenter. Because he's just bad. Like, he's no good.
He's just no good. And then that's what we are introduced to him with, right? He's trying to make a rocking chair.
Trying to make a rocking chair. And we just get all of this stuff throughout. This is Benjamin Mattin, a veteran of what we in the States, and they call in this the French and Indian War, but what y'all over there would call the 7 Years War.
Okay. Haven't heard of it.
The 7 Years, there's so many things you could actually make a case for it being the first world war, but the 7 Years War is one that I think actually could apply to that because I don't think there's really anything in Africa per se. I think there was some things over in Asia. There was massive fighting in Europe and then big fighting over here. And this is kind of what leads into why the colonies start rebelling. Is this, I believe it started in 1763 and then went to, 7 years. I get it. Some people ask them, like, I'll be like, okay, how long is the 7 Years War? And like 1763, and they'll start doing the math. I'm like, oh, those poor bastards. Pretty much that's the reason why they call it the 7 Years War, but it kind of went around. But basically, the whole thing was like Great Britain kind of defending, quote, the colonies from the French, and the French and the Indians, Native Americans, were together against the British. And so afterwards, the British, and probably rightfully so, were like, hey, colonists, we spent a shit ton of money over here defending it. All the bonuses that y'all are getting from all of this, where it's because of this, how about y'all pay something?
Yeah.
And up comes all these taxes, of which a lot of them were not fucking paid. Like, they were going to do the Stamp Act, and they're like, we're not fucking paying it. The main thing that happened was the tea tax. And then the tea comes in, out comes the Boston Harbor, and we're like, nope, fuck this. This is it. We're not doing it. So a lot of these taxes that weren't wanting to be paid were to pay for this fucking war that the colonists largely benefited from.
Okay, that's a bit more context that I probably should have got before the film.
No, but everything here is just like, oh, the colonists are over here just doing our own thing, and these evil British are coming in,
yes,
and saying, give us money.
Take our money and land.
No taxation without representation. Which, by the way, not having representation would be horrible, right? Certainly there's no place in the United States that is not represented in Congress, right? Oh, wait, Washington, D.C. literally is not represented in Congress.
Oh, really?
Yes. If you're in the District of Columbia, the literal capital has no representation in the House and Senate.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Why is that?
Because they're in federal land. They're not a state.
Oh, I see. Okay.
But
right.
It's like, no representation without representation. And it'll never be a state because it votes like 90% Democratic. So if you ever make it a state, that's automatically two Democratic senators. So there's no way in hell Republican states will put that into the Constitution. Yep.
It's so weird when you start thinking about how the politics of a country works, because it's always stupid.
Well, ours is really fucking stupid with the Electoral College and the Senate, which are antithesis to democracy, which is not a fucking democracy anyway.
I always think about ours, how like it's so obviously built around, you know, how you would send one person. I've always imagined it. We like elect our local representative or whatever. And I feel like back in the day, they would have, you know, been elected in their town, and they'd ride off on their horse down to London, and then they'd bring back the good news. And it's like, this is not how it works anymore. Like, we don't need it to be like that.
Which that was interesting here too, when they mail the mail. What's in the mail? Yeah. And then they open it up, and they're like, oh, they're voting. Oh, they're doing this. That's literally how they got the news, was the goddamn mail.
Yeah, and until then, you just are totally in the dark. No idea.
For weeks on end, but. Let's get to another thing that annoys me about this fucking movie, okay? So you're telling the story of the American Revolution. You can do anywhere. It started in Boston, basically. It was like a fucking Massachusetts and a Boston rebellion that just kind of spread everywhere into all the other colonies. So let's decide to tell this story in South Carolina, a slave state. Why? Why?
Yeah. I did notice that. Yeah. And then you've got the slaves and plantations.
Oh, they weren't slaves. Oh, no.
They weren't.
They weren't slaves. No, we're here of our freedmen. I'm like, oh, my God. I'm going to tear my fucking throat out when we get to there. But there was no fucking reason to tell this story from the perspective of like a plantation and the slave in the South, other than it was made in 2000. And they would not fucking do that. Rightfully so nowadays.
Yeah. Yeah. It would be a totally different story.
Yes. All right, so yeah, the fact that they shied away from the slavery question, and I saw a note that Spike Lee, rightfully so, walked out of the theater and was just irate that it was not brought up, and how the British treated it compared to the Americans, it's just like historically fucking offensive.
Yeah.
To just, you cannot tell this fucking story and not discuss the slave problem of freedom, fighting against tyranny, and then they have the gall to have Gabriel give what I think is like a good fucking line, where he's like, you know, they call this the new world. It's not. It's just like the old world, but we have a chance to build something new where all men are created equal in the eyes of God. And it's like, no, motherfuckers, that's a line you put in a Civil War movie, where at the end of it, slavery is going to be abolished. You don't even need to talk about how another 80 fucking years of Jim Crow is going to occur. Like 100 years of Jim Crow is going to occur. You cannot do that in the American Revolution, knowing that the fucking Civil War, that the state you're in is going to secede. The people that are fighting here are going to secede. And Chris Cooper, who is Harry, the colonel, you know that he fights? He is based on, I wanted to save this for the end, but I'm just going to go ahead and do it right now. When he says he names his son Gabriel. Okay, no, he's not. He's going to name his son Robert, because this is the main Confederate general, Robert E. Lee's dad. It is based on Light Horse Harry Lee, a hero of the American Revolution, whose son is going to be the main Confederate general who secedes from this new country and takes up arms against it. This is the kind of pussyfoot bullshit that drives me fucking nuts about this cowardly movie.
So the Civil War was not that long after this, was it?
Civil War was 1861. So roughly 80 years, 70 years pretty much. Yeah. 80 years. God. No, 1780. Yeah. 80 years.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, shit. Okay. Yeah. So that makes it... Oh. Because there is this weird little side plot, isn't there, of this man who's just got to work 12 months and then he's a free man.
Oh, my God.
It's not talked about that much, but he's just... That's just ongoing in the background. Every time he comes on the screen, he's like, 6 months to go, 2 months to go. And that's just his plot.
Yeah, because at the end of it, which again, both sides did this, the British did do that, where they said, hey, freed men, freed slaves, run from your slavers, fight mm-hmm. for us, and we will free you. So yeah. because of that, because then this scared the ever-loving shit, which again happened in the Civil War as well, when Union soldiers did that, basically saying the same thing, like this is forced slavery, basically run away, fight against them. They then had to enact that as well. And so the colonies had the same thing, where if you fight, we'll give you your freedom. Do you think at the end of the war and the victorious colonists won, do you think that was honored across the board?
It doesn't sound like
it. Fuck no, they weren't. Of course not. What are they going to petition? They're not citizens. They have no rights.
Yeah.
Who are they going to petition to?
Mm-hmm. They're going to say, well, you said this. I'll be like,
if they were in a slave state, they were probably fucked. Now, if somehow you got up to New York in the North
yeah.
and the war ended there, okay, then maybe so. But if you're fighting in these Carolinas campaign or you're at Yorktown in Virginia, no, you are probably going to be thrown right back on a goddamn plantation.
If you try and stay loyal to your South Carolina family, it's going to go to shit again.
I was absolutely. I was howling at those. Okay, I'm not to the screaming part yet.
Okay, I can't think. Did you tell me what you were screaming at?
It's the worst thing that possible that happened in the movie.
Okay, like, I think you did tell me in a message.
I don't think I did. No, I don't think so.
Okay, maybe not. Okay,
we really didn't have that many messages. Okay,
no.
All right, but yeah, this whole family's here. The youngest kid is Logan Lerman.
Who's that?
Percy Jackson.
Oh, shit. Really?
The youngest kid is Logan fucking Lerman.
The
I know.
Youngest kid.
Looks nothing like... I don't remember his name. He has like one line where he's sending
William.
Him away. William.
Oh, shit. Yeah, it is. Yeah. Oh, I recognize him.
Looks absolutely nothing. But no, get the slaves ready now, boy. We heading to Charlestown. Not Charleston. It's Charleston.
Yes, I know. That South did stand out to me.
Yeah. It's Charleston, South Carolina now. It was known as Charlestown. Obviously, not going to keep calling it Charlestown because, you know... Fuck the king and all that shit.
Oh, okay. Because it sounds like Charlestown.
Yeah.
Like his town.
That's what it was. It was called Charlestown, named after King Charles. The colony of Virginia, Virgin Queen Elizabeth I.
Interesting.
Georgia, King George. Yeah. All of these have these, like, our basis, like, in these names.
But you call it Charleston now.
It's Charleston. Yeah. Like, yeah. Charleston. There's no W. You put it as one word, take the W out. Charleston.
So it's... Oh, is a W been removed?
Yeah. Yeah. It's Charleston.
Oh, wow. Oh, yeah. Okay.
Charleston, all one word and not Charlestown like it used to be.
We have a lot of places that are spelt like that, but it's just pronounced like ton, you know.
Charleston. Yeah. No.
It's just laziness out of it more than anything.
Yeah, they probably did that too. Somebody might have misspelled it and they're like, fuck it. He's not the king.
Yeah, we'll just keep it.
The king's been dead for 100 years before this anyway. Like, they cut his head off. They cut his head off like 120 years ago at this time. We get to meet Aunt Charlotte.
Yeah, my first note is, oh my God, he is going to fuck his dead wife's sister.
Dude, that was, I mean, is it not every man's dream?
From the get-go. that's what this is doing. Okay.
The awkward sexual tension. Now, I'll say this. The athletic director of the college I coached at, his wife died. And he ended up marrying her sister.
I don't know how I feel about
you know this. What maybe they weren't, maybe they never got married, but they were definitely banging and like together.
Oh my God.
But it was one of those
again,
like
it's the trauma bonding again, like from Pearl Harbor.
It's the trauma bonding. They were together, they did all this stuff, and it's just like, hey, you know what, you kind of look like her.
Yeah. And then later on when she's like, I'm not my sister, and he's like, I know.
He's like, oh, I know. And then like too sick, I can't think of names. Like in Game of Thrones, when Jaime took Cersei by Joffrey,
Oh God, that was so. Oh,
So hot, I know, right?
That was so hot.
All right, so they get this assembly. And at night, this assembly gathers in this burning of effigies. And I tell you what, they have ammunition for days because they fire off about 87 rounds into the night. There's going to be about 12 people dead the next morning from these bullets coming down.
They're just loose with these guns. There's no safety, nothing.
America, baby.
That's America for you, yeah.
That's America. But I tell you what, I'm rolling my eyes and I'm like, oh, this movie's so stupid. And then I see those effigies burning of the English. And I'm like, okay, you got me, movie. Tar and feather. And they say, like, these people got tar and feather. And I'm like, oh, my God. I just want a tar and feather.
That's so hot.
I want a tar and feather an Englishman so bad before I die.
See, these bits of the movie I just totally glossed over. I didn't stand out to me. And you're, like, making notes.
And I'm like,
I fucking love this movie.
That's the thing. Like, Mel Gibson sucks. We did talk a lot about his, like, horrible history. God damn, he likes killing British people, and I can.
Yeah, do you know what, Braveheart? I could get on board with.
Oh, because it's like English particular. They
England
separated
versus
yep.
Scotland, isn't it? But this is more like Great Britain, United Kingdom.
It absolutely is, because one of the main at the climactic battle, which is based on the actual it's like two battles, but mainly the Battle of Cowpens. A major British elements was a Scottish, was a Highlanders regiment.
Oh, wow.
And so
okay.
I'm just like, did Mel know about that? Did he know that it was the Scottish?
He's killing Scottish people, actually, Braveheart.
Because at this point, you can't really tell. And because these are German kings, this is George III, George I and all that. These are the German line. This is from Hanover. This is the one that would eventually be called Windsor now to separate from the anti-German sentiment in World War I. There were a lot of Hessians and a ton of like Germans and Prussians that were fighting also. And as well on the American side too, because they were just like mercs.
Oh.
Yeah, they really were. I should say the Hessians maybe were the Prussians. Oh, fuck, now I'm confused. The Hessians, I believe, were more Americans than I think. I think those are the ones that like Princeton. Now I'm kind of confusing myself on that. But anyway, 28-12, the levy has passed. Sign up, boys. Time to go kill me some redcoats.
Oh, yeah, and his son, well, one of his sons, Gabriel, wants to sign up and does sign up.
Played by Heath Ledger. So,
I saw that he died when he was 28.
20. Moment of silence for Heath Ledger. Yep, the Dark Knight got him.
It's very surreal to think of that, because I remember when he died, I don't know how old I would have been, but I thought, you know,
it was 2008, so you'd have been like 17.
It was 2008? Yeah. Okay, so I remember thinking, 13, oh, God, 14, he's 14, like 14, an 14. Adult. And now you look at it and you're like, he was 28.
He's so
and
I, young
now,
here,
now I'm
though.
31. I'm like, I'm older than he ever was.
But that's he's so sad. Young here. Like,
yeah, a proper baby.
Yeah, so if he would have been 28, he was born in 80 or 81, I guess. So, yeah, he's pretty much like 20 fucking years old here.
Yeah, like and I think the year before, 1999, he was in 10 Things I Hate About You, which is just one of my favorites of all time. Like, it's so good, and he's just brilliant in it.
Never seen it.
Oh, we should watch that.
I might actually show that in class, in the pop culture class.
Like a Shakespeare thing?
Taming of the Shrew.
Shakespeare.
Every time I do that, I'm like, isn't that based on Shakespeare? And they're like, what? I'm like, haven't you seen Scary Movie? One kid actually asked, he's like, can we watch Scary Movie? I was like, I wish we could. But unless you want me going on paid leave for a couple weeks and never returning, no. All right, so at the South Carolina, the capital here, the Gadsden flag, that is the Don't Tread on Me flag with the snake.
Oh, you told me about that.
Which has been co-opted by shithead conservatives and anti-government people nowadays. You'll see that later on in the battle as well. I know it's a badass flag. The Gadsden flag is fucking awesome. The Don't Tread on Me flag. The Join or Die flag is fucking awesome. I just restarted Fallout 4 because of the Fallout series. Fucking great series. Make sure y'all go watch that if you haven't yet. And right up front, the Minutemen are a big thing in there. You're in Boston. And so I saw the Join or Die flag created by Ben Franklin.
Like,
perfect time for the Patriot.
I'm not sure if I'm going to watch the Fallout series or not.
It's
as someone who hasn't played any of the games.
I've seen a lot of people who have not seen it like it. I truly don't think you need, it's just like The Last of Us. I'm telling you, they looked at The Last of Us and they learned the perfect lessons from it. tell a great fucking story, but have the atmosphere and the feel of the game. And this absolutely has the atmosphere and feel of Fallout. It's got the ridiculous humor mixed in with ridiculous violence, but overall a very good story. It is not shying away from like the anti-capitalist, anti-imperialist nature of Fallout. I was worried about that because a lot of people miss that when they're like, don't put politics in my games. I want games like Fallout with no politics. I'm like, are you fucking insane?
I know. I can't stand
the whole like point that. Of it was this like American capitalism and consumerism ruined the fucking world. So they don't shy away from it at all. They hit on the experience. I think it's really good. I think it's worth watching.
Yeah. I think what put me off is that I watched The Last of Us before playing The Last of Us game. And because it was so similar to the game in that it was almost shot for shot, it kind of ruined the game for me.
This tells a completely new story. There is nothing in
from
the games. They said
that's good then.
They said the games are canon. This takes place after all of the games. So everything in here is going to be original. And that is a good point that you make.
Okay.
There.
Yeah, that's what I would do. Because anybody who asks me now if they haven't played the game or watched The Last of Us TV show, I'm always like, play the game first. Because you can just then enjoy the TV show.
Now, Walton Goggins plays a ghoul, a super ghoul, who's like a fucking cowboy western.
I've seen this person, I think.
Obsessed with him. Absolutely obsessed with it. I want that to be my Halloween costume now. Somehow I want that. It's fucking awesome. Okay. All right. We really need to pick up the pace here. Otherwise,
I know
this guy's so goddamn scene. Okay. All right. Here we go. Tom Wilkinson is fucking Lord Cornwallis. Love Tom Wilkinson and everything. He's great here. Playing a pompous British general.
Oh, okay. Yes. Yeah. I did think all of the British characters were really well portrayed. Like Jason Isaacs is obviously so good.
I told you about that last week, that so Jason good. Isaacs was the most mustache twirling villain. Did I undersell that?
Oh my God. No, you didn't.
Oversell it, yes.
No. This was very much just perfect bad guy. He's so good. He's so menacing. When his hair was down in that one scene, I was like, oh shit, he's a sexy bad guy.
Oh, dude.
This was just his, you know, this is his audition for Malfoy, you know.
Dude, I'm telling you,
sure.
Oh, I think it is. And yeah, he has played Colonel William Tavington, based on a real person, Bannister. I guess it's Bannister. I heard somebody pronounce it as Bannister.
Yeah, I think it would be Bannister.
Tarleton. Okay, I always called it like Banastri because I didn't know how to say his fucking name. Yeah, Bannister Tarleton, a real person who in the States here is absolutely known as a fucking butcher. Vilified. Ooh. If you say this guy's name, this is what you think of.
Yeah.
But I did see some things that I knew about this before looking into this, that it is totally whatever side you're on. Like, this guy would go on to live like another 50 years after the war, was perfectly fine afterwards, and never got tried up on anything, became like a bit like some kind of very minor nobility. He was some kind of nobility, I think, anywhere, something like that. But it's just, he is a fucking demon to the United States. But on the flip side, this the guy that Benjamin Martin is based on, Mel Gibson, is Francis Marion, who I've brought up before. Do you remember me bringing up Francis Marion? Do you remember this nickname? The Swamp Fox.
Yeah, I do remember the Swamp Fox.
The Notebook. That abandoned mansion that he buys was fucking Francis Marion's.
I remember bringing up
and telling you about the Swamp Fox. So over here, this guy is fucking awesome because he was a guerrilla fighter. He did, you know, he obviously helped win American independence. But the British are like, no, he's a fucking terrorist who rapes and murdered natives and everybody. So it's just that flip side of which side you're on.
And which whoever tells you the story. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and there's also like evidence that Francis Marion, who, by the way, was a slave owner. So Benjamin Martin, who's based on, was not it. Francis Marion was a slave owner, and his slaves ran away to fight for the British. So he wasn't just brutal to the natives and the British as well. He was just a fucking racist piece of shit, but he helped win independence.
Mm-hmm. Jason Isaac's character didn't really die in the end.
No. Oh, no. He lived like another 50 years. Yeah, I know.
They've Michael Bayified the ending.
Oh, again, I'm waiting. Those who know, know. Those who know what I'm hitting on, the most egregious event, the most historically made up thing in this movie.
Okay, I think I can imagine what it is.
Yeah, I think
I'll wait.
Yeah, does it? Yeah, okay, we'll see. We'll get there. Okay. All right, so yeah, so Tavington comes in. We already talked about these slaves being impressed into the king's army, okay? Like impressed, which is going to be with the War of 1812's kind of idea over too. And yeah, R.I.P. Thomas Martin. The kid that gets shot in the back.
I hated this moment.
That he had no plan? I know, he just like kind of Charlie just horses run. The run, Gabriel, run!
Mm-hmm. I think obviously they didn't realize how evil Jason Isaacs is.
Yeah, like I tried to tell you how evil he was, and he was the most, and it's just like, no, he's going to kill children.
Yep.
He's going to do so much worse later. Like, they really fucking laid it on. These British, these redcoats are, they made them fucking Nazis.
Yeah, they're, yes, exactly. Yeah, I think anytime they're coming in the uniforms as well, I don't know why, it just makes me think.
The music, don't. It's like, oh my God, the red coats.
Super dramatic music. They're on their horses. Oh, yeah. They just, these are the bad guys here. I was cheering for Americans at one point.
Yeah, unlike Pearl Harbor, this never had me rooting for the British, and I was rooting for the Japanese. there. All right, so another thing that comes about here, I saw this note. Historically, it's agreed upon that generally that the colonists probably violated the rules of war more often than the British.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, of course, because they were the fucking ones rebelling. There was no,
yeah.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen in almost all wars. The people that are rebelling, the smaller
gonna
ones,
break the rules.
They're going to break the rules because they need to win. They're going to fight, you know, guerrilla style.
Mm-hmm.
So it works.
I did find that quite interesting about this film. I don't know if I've watched many films where it's, you know, Braveheart, obviously they meet on a battlefield and have a battle, but this just seemed really well thought out. You know, they all line up and they literally take it in turns to shoot each other.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
Reload their guns. You shoot this time. I don't think I've seen many films where the war is like that.
That's going to be all wars from the 18th into Napoleonic. Like, that's what they did. And that's why it was thought of, like, the British were gentlemen. You were going to line up. You were going to have discipline. And you weren't going to break ranks. That's why they wanted that warfare, because they were the most disciplined, most trained. Mm-hmm. Obviously, whenever they did this with the colonists, even the regulars, it was just they were going to fucking beat them, because they, by and large, battle-hardened in that sense. While a lot of these colonists may have fought in the French and Indian War, a lot of the regular people didn't. Yeah, George Washington and your higher-ups obviously cut their teeth on it, but so many people were just volunteers, and this is the first fighting they were ever going to have. And then mm-hmm. you have the actual militias like this, where it was like, no, they were like a medieval militia, where time and time again, in the South and in the North, the militia were going to run immediately as soon as the fighting happened.
I kept thinking, what is your profession?
Yeah, what is your profession? I mean, like, literally a blacksmith. I'm a carpenter. I'm a mm-hmm. farmer. There you go.
I am not a Spartan.
Yes. And it also plays into this whole movie here is, look at these ragtag bunch of farmers beating the best and best army and empire in the world. And it's like, no. Yes, in the Battle of Cowpens and in the Southern campaigns, a lot of it was like a militia. The only reason this country exists to this day was George Washington being able to field an army, and he had a standing regular army. He was tactically not very good, tactically meaning like battle, okay?
Yeah.
Strategically, though, when we talk about strategy, is like campaigns and overall like war strategy, okay? His whole thing was survive. If there's an army in the field, then we have a country. And yeah. then they hit on this so much with the French, right? Oh, the French, these French, they don't do all that. If France does not join the war, there is no fucking way the United States is here today.
God, that's scary to think, like, how different things could be.
Like, literally, if the French, and another thing, too, is because the French did help, and like the Navy was it. The U.S. had no fucking Navy. The French Navy, as well as the Battle of Saratoga that comes afterwards. Basically right there, if that doesn't happen, then France doesn't become bankrupt. If they don't really become bankrupt, then there's probably no French Revolution. Because the French Revolution, all those people were largely inspired by the successful American Revolution. And mm-hmm. so this entire world, if there's no French Revolution, there's no Napoleon. If there's no Napoleon, then there's no 19th century. There's no what I mean is, like, if literally, if the United States does not, if loses this, I'm sorry, if there is no United States,
mm-hmm.
it's a sliding door. There is no history from that moment on that is what we have today. Like, nothing is the same.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can't think about things like that for too long because it melts my brain. It's like the one, I know it's not a little thing. That's not a little thing, like losing or winning this Revolutionary War, but it's like the ongoing domino effect that it could have on the world as we know it is insane.
Yeah, and especially like, and again, I don't care. I've said this time and time again. I do think that in a weird way, the presence of the United States up to now has had a negative impact on the entire world. It's been great, largely for whites, middle class, and well-off Americans. But outside of that, I can tell you this right now. The United States winning the American Revolution was dreadful for Native Americans.
Yeah.
It was dreadful for African Americans. Like, that's a fucking fact. I don't think that's debatable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, and how their lives could have been totally different.
Yeah. And like just everything from the Industrial Revolution that's kicking out, it's such a historical like what if that comes out of it.
Yeah, and there's just no real way of knowing how the other way would have been impossible.
Oh, you literally, we can't even fathom it. It's like thinking of the future, like predicting the future. We don't fucking know it. So
wasn't there a TV show that was about if the Germans won World War II?
Man in the High Castle.
Is that good? I never watched that.
I have heard good things about it, but not enough good things to actually warrant it. And it's the same thing with the game Wolfenstein. I haven't played it, but the Wolfenstein and New Colossus are that alternative universe where the the US is conquered by Nazi Germany and Japan, Imperial Japan.
Oh god.
For those games are really good too.
Yeah, okay. I'm tempted to watch the show.
I think it's probably going to be worth a first viewing, a first episode to see. I think I might do that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
I think I might pilot. Do that. Sometime. All right, so Benjamin now and his new posse of child soldiers, they ambush the Brits. He goes demon mode and hatchets
badass.
His corpse to super death.
Yes, he goes berserker mode and the kids are horrified.
And they see one kid likes it, but then a couple of the kids are the youngest one, Logan Lerman kid, is just like, oh, this is kind of...
Mm-hmm.
Kind of sketch.
And
my dad,
baby girl Susan as well, is not happy.
Yeah, she is not happy at all. Oh, heartbreaking moment later on when she just runs after him and is just like, I'll say whatever you want, just stay. I was like, movie, no, don't.
I know,
movie. You got me.
This is one of the moments where I was like, I hate this so much. I hate it. And what's worse is that young woman, well, would have been young woman, sadly passed away at the age of 21.
Oh my god, I did not look that
Susan.
Up.
Susan. The actress who played Susan, yeah.
Oh, man, what happened?
Well, there was two things on Wikipedia. One of them said that her mother passed away and then she had some kind of like epileptic fit or something and didn't get the medicine that she needed. And then another source said that she had an accidental drug overdose. So I'm not really sure what it was, but bless her, she was only 21.
Damn it, I hate like...
Sorry.
I know, but it is because they're forever like this kid.
Yeah.
Damn. Well, you just fucked me up there.
Sorry.
Way to go. All right. So battle time. And we get a meme time with the sidekick to Cornwallis, his aide. The cocky British noises or whatever is always that one where he's just so like. It is so good right there. Yes. We also get to see here Colonel Tavington would prefer to follow his own command. I'm sure that will come back later. Gabriel, though. Gabriel picks up this bloody flag. And they say, based on General Gates tucking tail and running, this previous battle would have been the Battle of Camden. And the Gates that he's talking about, that is Horatio Gates, the hero of the Battle of Saratoga, after which France would decide to recognize this young United States and then start to send aid. This is the battle where a one Benedict Arnold saved the day. The actual hero of Saratoga was a guy named Benedict Arnold. Now, every American's going to know that name because later on, that guy would try to sell out West Point to the British. He'd be a turncoat with John Major. And now Benedict Arnold is synonymous with traitor in American lore.
Whoa. Oh shit, that is drama.
It is drama because it really sucks because it is a wrong that literally the Battle of Saratoga, like Benedict Arnold was the fucking hero of that and he got no credit for it. And this Horatio Gates, and there's a reason why this guy Gates is not well known in the US, doesn't have, you know, too much named after him, and largely people aren't going to know, was because he fucking tucked tail after this here, kind of gets removed from command. And now we later on know that, oh, really, he kind of didn't do shit at Saratoga, really took credit for it, was kind of an asshole. And it should have been Benedict Arnold, but Benedict Arnold was an actual traitor and would end up moving to England, dying, and nobody giving a shit about him. But there might not be a United States without Benedict Arnold, and he is now synonymous with being a traitor.
Oh, God, what a way to go.
It is, and it's one of those things that wonder if he would not have been a traitor and wouldn't have done it, would he eventually have gotten credit for it? And then now we
hero
think of
status, yeah.
And now it's a hero status, yeah. Another what if?
What if?
What if? Yeah. All right. So the French here, this is Czech. I think I used to pronounce this name. Czechy Cario. This guy was in so many movies from the late 90s to early 2000s. I love this fucking guy. He's like just a quintessential Frenchman to me. He is playing Jean Villeneuve, who I assume this is based on the Marquis de Lafayette, who was like a 20-year-old guy who came over from France and helped train Americans. An American hero over here, Lafayette. So many things are named like Lafayette after this guy. He would go on to do this tour of the United States in the early like 19th century, years after, like 40, 50 years after, as this like hero of the revolution. And I'm like, okay, this is a little call out to him right here. Call out to the French, giving the French their due.
Yeah, I did like this character. I love his accent. I don't know he's actually from. He's a French actor.
He's French,
I just read he's born in Istanbul. So I guess he's a
Turkish.
Yeah, Turkish, but he has this beautiful accent. I think some of the words that he said, oh, I just love the French accent. And sometimes he would reply in French, he'd just be like, absolutely.
Absolument.
Like, oh, love it.
We are 100% sometime. I should have done it this month because I know I watched it again when I went to France, when I went to Orléans and the footsteps of Joan of Arc. The Luc Besson 1999, The Messenger, the story of Joan of Arc.
Oh,
so much historical stuff wrong with it. He is in there and he's again just there's so many French people in there because I actually did get some French people. Outside of Mia Jovovich, who is decidedly not French. But he's very good in that. And yes, I've been obsessed with his. Whenever I think of a French accent, I think of his first and foremost.
Yeah, I wish I knew what I recognize him from. Oh, he's in Bad Boys, apparently.
Yes, the first one.
Yes. I'm just scrolling through his filmography because I recognize him so much and I don't know what from.
We will do The Core on a bad movie month because that is one of the most awesomely bad movies there is.
Okay. Yeah. It must be Bad Boys that I recognize him from because I don't know any of these other films.
Yeah. He kind of just showed up a lot in a lot of 90s movies, a lot of American movies in the 90s.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So we meet here, Colonel Burwell. Talked about earlier. This is based on Lightfoot. I might have said Light Horse earlier. Lightfoot. No, Light Horse Harry Lee. Fuck. Now I don't know. Is it Lightfoot Harry Lee? Lightfoot Harry Lee. Lightfoot doesn't sound right, but it must be Lightfoot Harry. Okay, it's one of those. I don't know. I'm blaming the whiskey and cough meds. All right. So Gabriel goes to recruit though, and it might be the most American thing in this movie isn't stabbing a horse with an American flag. The most American thing is bringing a gun into a church.
Oh my God. Yes. As you're trying to recruit people, he goes, this is a house of the Lord or something. He goes, yes, I know. I'm sorry. Then he gets his gun out. I'm like, oh God, it's better to just ask forgiveness there and then.
Oh, you don't need to do that. This is America. We don't ask for forgiveness. God understands. God.
Oh, he gets it.
Jesus is American. Yeah. Okay. It is Light Horse. It is Light Horse Harry Lee. Okay. I just had to double check on that. All right. So
there was one, a really sad line, you know, just as Gabriel decides he's going to go off and it's just before, cause dad goes off with him. Right.
Yeah.
But there is a moment where he's trying to convince Gabriel to stay. And Gabriel goes, I'm not a child. And he goes, you are my child. Yeah. And it's like, oh, my mom says that to me all the time. I hate it so much. It broke my heart.
I do think it is one of those you can think about it and you can quote understand it, but I don't think you will really understand it unless you have a child.
I know. Yeah, I totally agree.
But it's
totally
the same,
get it.
It's the same thing I deal with. Like thinking about now is like I'm fucking 40, but it doesn't matter. I'm going to be my parents' boy and my parents' kid no matter how fucking old I am.
Yeah, my mom says it all the time. She'll be like, she like refers to herself as my mummy, and I'm like, come on, mother, it's fine. And she's mummy. Like, you'll always be my wee girl. I'm like, right, okay.
You're like, yeah, I mean, mom, I'm old. I'm 30.
I'm grown up.
I'm grown. I'm grown. That's right.
And then I ring her if something breaks. I'm like, what do I do?
My power's off. What do I do? All right, so we get, I'm not going to lie, I kind of forgot what Gabriel's wife's name, Anne, there we go.
Yeah, Anne, yes, we love Anne.
Yeah, Lisa Brenna playing Anne, she speaks up in a church, of all places.
A woman.
In 1776, and after about four words, I'm like, where's the backhand to her? Where is it?
Who's controlling this?
Whose wench is this? Okay. So she speaks up about freedom and whatnot. Bitch, you are not going to be able to vote in this country for like 150 years. Sit the fuck down.
Yeah, I did find some of these moments, even like in the very beginning where I think they have a council or something and all these women are there. And I'm like, is this, would you guys have been there?
You know what? I will go ahead and say this. There's no fucking way they would be inside they're present. No way. If I'm wrong about that, like someone please that knows more about this, please own
it.
It
did stand out to me. I did think that's a bit strange. I didn't, you know.
Yeah, there's no fucking way they'd be in there with like men speaking, because I do think it'd be one of those. It's going to get heated and we can't do this in front of women in the language.
Yes, we must protect them.
Yeah, yeah. But literally, women in the United States could not vote until the 19th Amendment in 1920.
That's so crazy.
So save all this fucking freedom talk that women have been able to vote for 104 years.
Mm-hmm. It's I hate when you like get stats like that, because that's like a, you know, it's so recent.
Dude, and I've been stressing that as I teach this in here. I'm like, we talk about all this stuff like it's old. And I tell them about how my fucking parents, my dad went to a segregated high school. It is one generation removed from me. Like they were alive. My dad was a teenager when like the fucking Jim Crow was being eradicated and ended in the mid 60s. Like this shit is so near to us.
Yes, and it feels ancient, I guess, especially to like the age of the kids that you teach. It must feel even far removed.
Like, I know we've mentioned this before, but it was closer from my birthday to D-Day than it is from my birthday to today.
Yeah, that's so grim.
That makes my head fucking spin.
Mm-hmm. And then I need to find my equivalent of that. I'm going to be 31 soon, so.
Yeah, it's...
I always go back to the troubles. Like, that's for me what comes to mind straight away. It's how close that was, really.
Well, yeah, I know we said that before too. That was 97, right?
Well, that's 98 is when they signed 98? The agreement. Okay. Yeah,
I was 14. I was a teenager. I was in high school.
Mm-hmm.
That I was 7 when the Soviet Union ended. Like,
that's so weird.
I grew up at the Cold Fucking War. Like, I was there. Yes, like Berlin. There was an East and West Germany until I was 5.
Yeah.
Like, this
That's
is, yeah,
so
it's,
crazy.
It is. It's so ridiculous. Yeah, it's so, it's crazy. All right. We get the slave here, Occam. He's he's a representative here. He gets to sign his own mark because Benjamin Martin is apparently from the year 2000 when it comes to that. He's like, oh, I'd like him to sign his own mark. Well, I just signed him over to you. Movie, fuck you.
I know, fuck off movie at this point. I can't be bothered.
Dude,
and they make so many big deals out, like this moment, like you said, he makes a point of saying again, I would like him to write his own. It's like, oh, he's a good guy. Good for you, Mel Gibson. Just
make his own mark. Okay. Oh my God. Own it, you stupid fucking movie. We do get, all right, so this was good though. I did like this. By and large, the uniforms and to me, the look, the feel, and the fight and the tactics and the battle and all that was really good. Like, okay, unlike Braveheart, when they're in fucking woad in kilts, they're actually of like the time and everything here. And the guerrilla warfare, that's what fucking Francis Marion was. And getting up to like Dan Morgan, Daniel Morgan, they talk about him later. This was guerrilla fucking warfare in the South. And this is what they were doing. The ungentlemanly type shit. And this is where your fucking war crimes and atrocities start. Because if you're not going toe-to-toe fighting, the British got to die. Oh, no.
Oh, no.
I'm dead.
We need more whiskey.
I'm dead.
More of that South Carolina whiskey.
It's Kentucky whiskey. Okay.
Okay,
I'm
good.
I'm alive. I'm dead. I'm alive. Okay. Because they're doing this guerrilla warfare and they're not fighting like straight up, it then causes the British to be like, okay, fuck you. You're not fighting regular. You're not troops. You have no quarter. You're traitors. We're going to kill you.
Okay. That's why they all get sent to the slaughter. I did like the outfits. I thought they did look good. And I guess from my limited knowledge, they seemed pretty accurate, but...
Yeah, they had a red coat, right?
Exactly, yeah. A red coat.
Oh my God, I'm dead.
Oh, take a moment.
Okay, no, we're good. We got to keep going. We fight on. We fight on. It's just everything's draining now, which is good, but it's not good when you're trying to like talk.
Talk, yes.
Yeah. But I mean, the thought of me not being able to talk, though, I'd rather be dead. Imagine people not hearing my voice.
Man with podcast.
But I got godsmacked right there. All right. So I think I might have hit on this earlier. This, again, to me, what I'm getting out of this movie is this is how the war was won, with irregulars and the militia defeating this big, bad British army. Mm. And it's like, no, the war, again, was won by regulars in the field and actually being able to hold their own. And yeah. Well, I should say this, being able to exist, like I said earlier.
Mm-hmm. I loved when they were doing the recruiting from the church and, you know, like you mentioned earlier, the priest or whatever type of churchman he is, you know, distraught initially at Gabriel being in there with a gun. And then by the end, he decides to leave with them as well. And he does a great line where he says, a shepherd must tend his flock and at times fight off the wolves. I was like, oh, shit. Go off, yeah. Reverend.
It is. But at the same time, it's like you're not fighting against extermination here, you know? Mm-hmm. And if you're going to go, don't go as like a fighter.
Yeah.
Like go as a like a chaplain.
Mm-hmm. Or a healer.
As a priest, is it?
Mm-hmm.
All right. I'm going to try to get through this, but my voice. Oh, we don't have too much more. I think I only have like a page and a half left. No. All right. Where are we at? Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Okay.
This is only an hour into the film as well.
We'll speed up. I promise.
Yeah, I was just so shocked. This is one of those films where I was like, what? Because obviously we start and it's like 3 hours long, right?
Yeah.
So I'm checking every now and again. I'm like, an hour has went by. What have we done?
So the first hour felt a long time. And yeah. I don't know what it was, but I'd say the past hour and a little bit over the past hour really flew by.
Yeah. Yeah. There's moments where it's totally dragging and I'm like, what is the meaning of this? What are we doing? And it's like they're just kind of wandering around a lot. And then it kind of picks up the pace a little bit.
Okay. Yeah. And we will pick it up as well. How about the meeting, though, with Martin and Cornwallis?
Oh, the meeting in the house?
Yeah, with the dogs.
Where they bring the dogs back. I liked that they kept doing the joke where the dogs liked Mel Gibson more. And they wanted to stay with him. And we did a little circle back to Mel Gibson sitting on a rocking chair and being like, oh. How does this work?
Yeah, he's kind of more interested in that.
Yeah. I did like it. And obviously it's all a big ruse and they don't really have any, what was it? Our captured
the
soldiers.
Prisoners. Yeah. The prisoners there. That seemed really shitty.
What, where they bring the scarecrow in?
All right. I don't know what I can do. It's tickling and it just keeps tickling.
You want to like take?
No, let me just take this real quick and see if that clears out the phlegm. Okay. Oh yeah. Oh, that's so good. Okay, we're good. And we're leaving this in. Oh. Yeah, so and he says his rank only. He doesn't say his name.
Yeah.
Yeah. But Tavington tries to goad him into fighting with this stupid little boy.
Oh, I know. I did. I wrote the exact same words, I thought, because he's not allowed to strike first. He's given strict orders, which I did like, because initially
Yes.
I thought Jason Isaacs was in charge, but he's not. He's kind of like this rogue, some sort of team
He's
leader, I guess.
a colonel of
A
the
colonel.
dragoons, who
Okay.
dragoons are going to be your cavalry, who typically will ride in but then fight on foot.
Yes. Oh, yeah. We see him do that. That's fucking cool when he like jumps off his horse and just goes straight into battle. He's great. But yeah, he's very much under strict rules here that they came in to negotiate. And so he's not allowed to strike first. So yeah, you're right. He tries to goad him into making the first move. Thankfully, Mel Gibson does not do that and they get away. And then I love the scene where the guy brings in the scarecrow into the room and he's like, "One of our captured soldiers, sir."
Captured soldiers, sir.
I thought that was really funny.
Yeah, and I did like that he also said, "I'm a colonel with the regulars." Like he didn't say who he was. He's like, "Oh, he'd be strung up immediately."
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
It's at times the British representation is interesting because it's not good, and they show them as really shitty and cocky, which I
Yeah.
think is fine. Because I think that's an American thing of being like they're aristocrats, and they absolutely are. Like you would not be a general at this time based on a meritocracy.
Okay, yeah.
Like
Some because
you would be some kind of nobility.
okay, yeah. I think it was funny whenever because you have the character like Jason Isaacs, who's obviously this sort of like you described so perfectly as like mustache twirling evil, but then some of them are just taking the piss out of each other as well.
Yeah, and his aide also knows he gets to talk shit because he's his
Yes,
aide.
exactly. Yeah, the aide, I love that he just taunts him
He's
and
so
bit
posh.
talks back to him as well. And it's you're right, they're posh, and that's how they get one up on each other is they make
Yeah.
snidey little remarks to each other.
And Cornwallis can say whatever he wants because he's a fucking general. Major General. Yep. All right. So after this, basically, Cornwallis like lets loose the leash, if you will, from Tavington. And he talks about he says a new aristocracy will be landowners. What the fuck do you think old aristocracy is? The whole point of aristocracy and aristocrats and nobility is you have fucking land. Power is in land.
Was this him saying that he wanted to own land here?
Yes, in Ohio, which is
Oh,
what they talk
yes. Oh,
about.
yes. Tell
So
me about
tell me
Ohio.
about Ohio. And I fucking howling. Another howling
Yes.
moment when I heard that, because I kind of forgot about the tell me about Ohio. And I thought about, I know our lovely listeners connected Valerie and Lawrence, who are connected to
Yes.
Ohio.
Both Ohio, homebodies there.
Ohio. God damn, I love Jason Isaacs. Yeah, so this was another thing that was a huge sticking point of the American Revolution, was because in Ohio territories and all of that West were natives, colonists were like, hey, there's a lot of land over there. There's a lot of good land. We're going to go settle that land. And the
Right.
British were just like, no, that's going to cause a lot of fucking conflict. And we're not going to make any money off of it. So how about no? And they like basically barred colonists from settling those lands. So that was another thing there that wasn't really about taxation and representation, all that. It was fucking Manifest Destiny 1776 style.
Okay. What so it would have caused internal.
I mean, that's what the whole Indian Wars and everything was about, was Americans kept colonizing on native lands.
Yeah.
Natives were like, fuck off, killed them. And then we were like, oh my God, they massacred these families who were colonizing their lands. Let's go genocide them. Like, that's all. And then I'd say Manifest Destiny, for those that don't know, that's basically the American belief that sea to shining sea, Atlantic to the Pacific Ocean, was granted to America by God. So anybody in the way, hello natives, talk to God about it when we kill you.
Talk to God.
Talk to God about it.
Go and ask him.
Yeah, it's one of the most famous paintings, is literal, it's like Columbia, which is the female manifestation, like Uncle Sam is the male of America.
Okay.
Columbia is the female one, and it's this angel going across the United States with like Yeah, God wills America to have this entire continent.
Oh, God. It's so yeah, it's not good. Horrible when you think about that.
Yeah, it's really not good. We're all a product of fucking colonization. If you're in the United States, like going back to the British and the Americans and the fucking Spanish and French, like the six flags over Texas, only yeah. one of them, the Confederacy, that one kind of wasn't in that sense. But yeah, Mexico, all of that. Well, I guess Mexico kind of wasn't either. It kind of broke off from it. So hello, imperialism. Yay. All right. This, they go burn down the plantation. They burn down Aunt Charlotte's plantation. And I'm like, oh no, eat shit, slaver. Fuck off. Oh no, the plantation's being burned.
The children.
Where are Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively going to have a wedding now? Didn't they get married? They got married at a plantation.
I didn't know that.
Pretty sure they did.
That's pretty fucking weird.
Fucking hate. We need to do. You like Ryan Reynolds, don't you?
No, not really. I like okay. Ryan Gosling.
We're going to do a Ryan Reynolds hate month because I can't fucking stand him, and his movies are shit. He is the poster child of white mediocrity.
Yeah, I agree. I don't like whenever I see people love Ryan Reynolds,
dude,
I'm like,
don't.
This is what Ryan Gosling deserves.
Yes, yes. Like,
he's so good.
It's one thing if Ryan Reynolds was this like awesome person.
Mm-hmm.
He did a bunch of good shit, and you're like, you can ignore the movies and shit. But it's like, why? I'm dead.
I know. I agree with you. Your sentiment yes. here. Why does
why
he
like him?
With
Ryan Gosling's yeah. right there.
And I think Ryan Reynolds is like, whenever I see him on talk shows and stuff, I'm like, okay, he's funny, and like he has, you know, him and Blake Lively have a good banter. I'm sure they're like nice, fun people to be around. But I don't. People love Deadpool though, don't they? And I've yes. never seen Deadpool.
Oh my God, I don't care for it, but I'll give him that one. Yeah, Ryan Reynolds and Blake Lively, a plantation themed wedding in 2012.
Sorry, themed?
A plantation themed wedding in 2012 in South Carolina.
No!
So that joke is even more pertinent that they can't have a wedding there.
Oh dear.
God damn it. God, anyway, my next note is holy shit, this movie is long.
Yeah, this is not even, this is probably like an hour and a half in.
I think maybe it might not even be an hour and a half in.
I hated this moment when they attack the house, and I was just pissed off because he goes to this one, who's the dude that's like giving him all this intel? Like some guy from the village that basically tells Jason Isaacs where
played by Adam Baldwin, who I love. I love Adam Baldwin in Firefly. I love him as an actor. Oh my God, he's Animal Mother in Full Metal Jacket. In the show Chuck, he's good. He's one of those where I will set. It's like John Voight. I love John Voight the actor, but he is very right wing, very conservative. So his politics suck. But I fucking love him in movies, and I will easily separate it. I will separate Adam Baldwin, the actor, from the person.
Okay, fair enough. Yeah. I just hated the moment where he just tells him, and you can tell he's not sure about it. And Isaac's like, where would his children yeah. be? And he's like, takes a moment, and he's like, oh, his sister. His wife's sister. She's right there. Yeah. And I was like, you're a little rat. And then he does the same thing later on where he burns the church down.
Yes. And this goes back to where, and I know this isn't a documentary, okay? But again, I feel it's my duty to say this. The American Revolution was not this groundswell thing where the overwhelming majority, almost everybody, was fighting and revolting, whatever you fucking want to call it, okay? There were a shit ton of loyalists, okay? Maybe even like more than half to half may have been actual loyalists, okay? In this movie, it's only personified in one person who's like a fucking snake here. And it's like, remember when we use the term patriots and traitors and all that the colonists are traitors, okay?
Yeah.
And yes, one person's traitor is another person's freedom fighter and patriot, and that's fine. That's why in the United States, we can look at George Washington and be like, he's a patriot. If he loses, he gets hanged as a fucking traitor. And it goes back to the fucking Confederate shit, where we look at the Confederates, and because we're so goddamn fucking racist, we're like, no, they fought for their states and their homeland. They are fucking traitors, and they should have been strung up from the closest tree. The same way all these fucking colonists would have been strung up by the British if they lost.
Yeah, it's all the double standards coming out.
It's just whoever wins and it's fine. It's the same thing when it comes to like, okay, look at fucking Vietnam fighting against the invading American, where it's like, yeah, we call them fucking guerrilla warfare and terrorists and oh, they're fighting and they're not in uniform and they're doing all that. Yeah, because we're an invading fucking army. Mm-hmm. Every person that I know complains about that, oh, the Vietnamese, they were in trees doing all that. And I'm like, buddy, Google Daniel. Well, no, I'm like, Google Daniel Morgan. Google the Carolinas campaign. You know what? Watch the movie The Patriot. Because we did that shit. Ho Chi Minh, the fucking George Washington of Vietnam, like, admired. I was going to say admirized. That's not a word. Admired the United States. He admired the United States so much that the fucking Vietnamese, like, Declaration of Independence, he took from the United States one. And it's basically word for word in points. And he took the guerrilla warfare as well, those tactics that were used, obviously, after the American Revolution, and fought the same shit, because we did that, because we fought the big, bad invading empire, the British Empire, the same way the fucking Vietnamese fought the big, bad invading American Empire.
Oof, they Uno reversed you guys.
They Uno fucking reversed, and you know what? The same way we beat the British ass and sent them back to London, they beat the shit out of us and sent us back to fucking Washington. But you know what?
There we go.
You know what, though? There are McDonald's in Ho Chi Minh City to this day. So who won there? Rock, flag, and eagle. Capitalism survives all.
Rock, flag, and
eagle. Capitalism.
I was going to say, I didn't realize that you said Ho Chi Minh there. And I was like, I've been to that city. And I didn't realize it was named after a person.
Yeah, Ho Chi Minh. Yeah, he was like their fucking George Washington. I want to go to Vietnam so bad.
That's where I got robbed, Ho Chi Minh City.
Did you really?
Yeah, it was horrible.
Like, actually, like, with a weapon?
No, it was all very clever. It was, like, stealing stuff out of my hands, swapping things. Yeah. It was very, very clever. And I was also just off, like, a 30-hour bus drive, so I was, like, delirious and, you know.
That's big in Paris, too.
Yeah,
like how
people
just
are clever.
Yep, they just kind of
took
do
my
everything
phone,
like
took
that.
All my money,
oh,
took
shit.
Everything. Yeah, it was
oh,
so
that's
bad.
Too bad. I've never heard anything bad about Vietnam. No, I really haven't. Like a oh, tourist. Okay. No, I kind of have a Vietnam vet dad, so you know.
I was like,
I've heard some things from Vietnam vets. Oh, I've heard a lot of things there.
Yeah. Let me say, my time in Vietnam was amazing and I loved it and I would go back immediately. It's just unfortunate that one person ruined Ho Chi Minh for me.
I mean, I had that shit happen in Paris too. Like any kind of major city, and you're going to have it in New York City. Like it's every major city, you're going to have shit like that. 100%. Not to like both sides or what about everything. Every single major fucking city in this world, you're going to have people like that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's the same in like every European city I've been to, all the big ones like Barcelona. It's
not Amsterdam though.
Amsterdam's so fucking chill.
Amsterdam's
the best place ever.
It is such an anomaly. It's so weird.
Mm-hmm.
God,
mm-hmm.
What a city. Y'all, everybody needs to go to Amsterdam one time in their life to experience that truly like mankind's anomaly.
Just beautiful.
All right, so we get to the war crimes and the atrocities here. They fucking murder a town, and the one guy, his wife and his little ginger son are fucking murdered. And man, I kind of forgot about this suicide that he does, and that shit took me back.
Yeah,
this movie
went dark. It went very dark.
Yeah.
Out of nowhere, I hated this moment because. I didn't know how he was going to react. And I feel like the guy, I don't know the actor's name, but he did a really good job because I was expecting, you know, like, I always think of your man in Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire. My son.
Oh my God. I'll never
horrific,
watch that again.
So horrible. So I was kind of preparing myself for that. And he does this, like, he doesn't scream. He doesn't shout. He kind of just gets up and then I don't know if it's whatever way the camera was positioned. I was like, oh no, he's going to do it. And then just out of nowhere, he does it. And it's really horrific and earns them all a week off where they go.
This,
and... spend time with their family.
Yes, a furlough. And this movie is so weird because it sucks. Okay, don't get me wrong. But there's things like this when they go to it, I'm like, fuck, they went dark here. Like, they're really making you think about what they're fighting for. And is it worth fighting for the freedom of this country if your family is going to be fucking murdered because of it? Like,
yes.
Is it okay to go back home and take care of your family and be thought of as a coward, but the most important people in the world are your family and they're safe? Mm-hmm. And is it fine living with being taxed without representation and having some fucking tyrant in quotes 3,000 miles away, but you have your family? Is it worth the freedom in winning this war if you lose everything that fucking matters to you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's one thing like going off and thinking that you yourself might get hurt, but if then your whole family's going to be targeted.
Okay, but not even to cut you off there, but then I think about you go off to fight this fucking war and you leave your wife.
Abandon them.
And your three children at home, and you fucking die face down in the mud in this field. In some fucking state you've never been to for what?
Yep.
For what?
And then back in the day as well, they might not even know. Like,
they'll know eventually when you don't fucking turn up. And you're right.
One
they'll
day
be like,
you don't come back.
They're MIA. They're presumed dead. They're fucking dead. You'll get a pension if we lose and you'll be thought of as a fucking traitor. I'm sorry. You get a pension if we win and you'll be thought of a traitor if you lose. Start trying to find somebody to marry as a widow with three fucking kids.
Yeah. Yeah. It's so grim.
It is. And that's the world. And that's the shit. Everyone loves history, like military history and talking about it. And it's fun and all. But it's like, that's the people's type of history to talk about. Is you go off to war and it's like, you die in glory.
Hero.
300 and all that. And I'm like, yeah, you'll be a fucking hero 100 years later to people who don't fucking care about your family. You'll be a name in there. You died in the fucking Siege of Yorktown, the final battle that got to the fucking war, and there's this, and you'll be a hero, and American Revolution. But your children will never fucking know you. Your wife will have to move on. Let's say your wife is fucking 32 years old or something, and someone's gonna be like, she's too fucking old. She's not gonna give me any kids. I'm not gonna fucking marry her. Then what does she do?
She can't look after herself.
There's no fucking welfare. There's not gonna be fucking welfare for like 150 goddamn years.
Yeah.
Like, that's the kind of shit to think about in history.
Mm-hmm. I was thinking for ages as well earlier on in the film where one of the kids starts talking about how he, one of the kids hates that he had to kill loads of people. The other one's like, I killed those people, Dad. And, you know, I'm glad I did it. And I was like, oh, that's really weird. And they talk about that a lot in The Walking Dead as well, where like the young child is kind of growing up in this new world and he like kills someone. And then he kills someone in cold blood and he's like, yeah, well, this is what we have to do. And it's just really interesting thinking about, like, should the children be protected from stuff like that? Or is it just the world we live in now? They have to just learn. And that's, I find that really horrific.
Yeah, when they brought that up and the kid had that response, I remember thinking, like, are they actually going to go into this? Like, he's looking at it being like, who am I fucking raising? I'm raising somebody like me, but they don't go into it. So I'm going to give them, I'm actually going to knock them points.
Yes.
For not going back into that. Cause I'm like, that's fucking interesting though. That's
exactly. Don't go up to the line and then just abandon it.
You have a 3-hour movie, fit that shit in. Okay.
Exactly.
Hey, you know what time it is? It's church burning time.
Oh,
okay.
This is where I said, fuck this movie. I hate you, movie.
This is where I'm sure y'all all guessed, and I'm sure you guessed as well. This is when I was fucking screaming, okay?
Yeah.
Because this did happen in real life.
Okay.
This actually happened. But here's the thing. It happened right after D-Day in World War II. The Nazis did this.
Oh.
basically, you know, again, this is right after D-Day. So we're talking about June 1944. It's called, I don't know, I like to think I know a little bit of French. The Oradour-sur-Glan massacre.
Mm.
And I massacred that fucking pronunciation right there. Oradour-sur-Glan. Yeah, Oradour-sur-Glan. Talking like Chessy Cario there. Where the French resistance, again, did a fucking great job, all right? But they had assassinated a Waffen-SS, which is like the elite of the fucking, like, it's the armed SS, okay? This is like the elite fighting force. they assassinated this like general and this leader. So as retribution, the Nazis rounded up 643 civilians. They put the women and the children in a church, and they burned the church to the ground, and they shot the men like nearby or in a barn or in like a field or something like that. Okay. So they took this thing again that the Nazis did and they gave it to the British.
To the big bad British.
In perfect fashion. This came up when we talked about Pearl Harbor, that the last survivor of the USS Arizona had just died.
Oh.
The last survivor of this massacre just died last February.
Really?
97 years old. He was 18 years old. He was one of, like, I think four survivors that, like, played dead and wasn't shot and was able to testify and said what happened. He was 18 years old, lived till 2023.
Jesus.
I know.
That's insane. The Pearl Harbor one really freaked me out, where he died like the week before we recorded.
But it's all of that that I think about when all of this, and it's one of those things I can only look at it for a certain amount of time before it like fucking overwhelms me, is all of, whether it be civilians that were murdered, okay? Whether it's just normal soldiers. I look at fucking D-Day, and it's just like, this guy, paratrooper, died on D-Day, age 19. And then I look at somebody else they were with that lived to like 2002.
Yes,
I'm like, so many fucking people, like, were denied a life.
Mm-hmm. They should have been living through the years that we were a part of.
All
as well.
Of it. They should have lived all the way. Yes, they should have lived all the way until we were like fucking 20 something years old.
Mm-hmm.
And they fucking died because of these stupid fucking wars.
Yeah, that's why I hate war films as well. I know I talked about that a lot Forrest Gump, Pearl Harbor. I hate it so much.
But I hate it because, and I do agree, I can't remember who even said it. They were like, you cannot make an anti-war film. And
no.
You can't. Like, Pearl Harbor is a pro-war film. This mm-hmm. is a pro-war film because there's glory at the end.
Oh,
and it's
yeah,
like,
totally it's, glamorizes
it's,
it.
Yes, and it's honoring the people who died as a sacrifice. And it's like, but they fucking died and they didn't get a life. And the only fucking movie I can think of that is an anti-war film that I honestly think should be shown, and I'll admit I copped out, I can't show it in class because I'm going to fucking cry, is Grave of the Fireflies, which is it's a Studio Ghibli movie. And it came out in the late 80s. And it's, I can't even talk about it because I'm going to fucking like even try to talk about like choke up. It's about a boy and a girl who are displaced during Japan during World War II at the end of the war. And it is the most heartbreaking. Like, I can't even talk about it.
I don't know if I want to watch that one. I'd have to be prepared.
You have to be prepared. And to me, it's a sociopathy test. And if you do not like have anything from it, like, I think you're fucked up.
Like, yeah, if you don't have a reaction to it.
Oh, it's ugh. Watch it. I can't recommend it enough.
Okay. I'll watch it some weekend. I don't have any other plans.
Sometime when you're in a good mood for a cry, like your headspace is there. Not when you're super happy because you don't want to be down, but not when you're already down. It needs to be when something comes up about World War II or maybe the atomic bomb or something in that sense. But I truly do believe it's a movie everybody should watch, especially every American who's like, yeah, we should have dropped the bomb. They deserved it. And I'm like, watch this fucking movie, because then you get to see that collateral damage and understand we didn't drop the bomb on Tojo. We didn't drop it on Hirohito or people like that. Like, a lot of the shit we did, there were civilians and there were fucking children who came out of it. And it's not to say that it was wrong to do. Like, it's just it's something that should be discussed.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
All right, so Gabriel decides to go get himself some revenge from all of this.
Oh, fuck this movie.
Yeah, and he kind of tricks him. And then, you know what? I had a bad joke here that I'm not going to say because I feel it would be in horrible taste after what I just said. So I'm not going to say it. But Gabriel, basically, he gets got by Tavington.
I hated this. And as much as I loved Jason Isaacs with his sexy hair down scene, oh my God. I was like, why did you do this movie? I don't Okay.
Stupid, sexy Tavington.
Stupid, sexy British man. I must admit they got me. They did get me. And I was just screaming at my screen, being like, where is Dad? I didn't realize that Dad hadn't caught up yet. And I thought that Gabriel had got him. I really thought Gabriel had killed Jason Isaacs and Dad was going to show up and he was going to be so proud of his son. And they got me.
Did you think he was going to survive the movie, Gabriel?
No.
Because I remember thinking he died so much earlier.
Right.
And it
okay.
went so long, I was like, man, I can't remember if I thought he was actually going to survive or not. So that was a good thing.
Yeah.
Having him survive so long, mm-hmm. I thought was an actual good thing that the movie did.
I remember one of my notes from very early on in the film, I think it's where they start working together, where Mel Gibson's character gets promoted to basically Gabriel's boss. So they start working together.
Boss.
Yeah. So I was like, and I was enjoying their little scenes together. And I was like, this fucking movie's going to take one of them from me. And I don't know which one it is at the moment, but I hate it already.
I don't remember. I remember watching it in theaters, but I don't remember if that surprised me. So the movie, I think the movie has largely some shit writing, despite it being from an Oscar-nominated writer. And it was the first thing mentioned in the movie. And it comes back here, where we hear Ben Martin, I have long feared that my sins will return to visit me. I'm like, okay, that's a good line. That's a good one.
Yeah, that's a good one. That's the Oscar.
I'll hand it to you, movie. I'll hand that to you.
Yep, and it does. And I love... My last line that I have written, like a quote, is the Frenchman saying, if I die, I will die well-dressed.
Of course. And they have so many, like, French.
Ugh.
And this, that's another, let's just hit this on nail on the head right there. It's so goddamn annoying that to this day, but it was such a big thing I remember growing up in the 90s, because it's this hangover from World War II that the French got knocked out so quick in that it's just, oh, the French, the Simpsons, Groundskeeper Willie, a bunch of cheese-eating surrender monkeys that he called them. And just everything, oh, the French, are they on their word? Oh, the French aren't here to fight. The French aren't there. And it's like, and at the end, even so, they're just like, oh, the help of the French, they showed up. And it's like, motherfucker, no. We would not exist without the French. And we're thinking, oh, if it wasn't for us, you'd be speaking German, you French over there. It's like World War II was a repayment from the revolution. We are now even. Without the French, the United States doesn't exist. And by and large, don't get me wrong, I know the Soviets did a fucking lion's share of it. But on the Western Front, the British held out. But it was the United States coming in and our fucking industrial might and logistics that fucking turned the tide in the West. And it was us that had this liberation, that spearheaded the liberation of France. And it's like, don't look at that as, oh, we saved your ass. Look at it as, hey, the spirit of 76 is now here for the spirit of 44.
Mm-hmm, now we're even.
Yeah, I love that. And it's with this fucking sparkling wine that I bought was Liberacion. And it was like this thing where this guy was a Frenchman who emigrated to the U.S. Oh, fuck, it wasn't. It was a Frenchman who emigrated to the U.S. And like this thing was, his sparkling wine was this like tying together of the Americans and the French. And I'm like, fuck, yes. Because if there's one last good thing that America did, it was liberating fucking Western Europe.
Mm-hmm. Oh, I want to have some of that sparkling wine.
It was good. And it wasn't expensive because it wasn't champagne. So it was actually kind of cheap.
I think next time I need to have something else other than peppermint tea.
Yeah, Liberacion. Oh, it's so good.
Oui, oui.
All right, so now we're setting up to this climactic battle, and we hear Harry Burwell talk about Green and Dan Morgan are down, and I'm like, oh, Green and Dan Morgan. This is General Nathaniel Green, who is basically in charge of the Southern Light campaign in there. And then we get Dan. He calls him Dan Morgan, which is funny because it's just like, his name is Daniel Morgan, and I'm wondering if they actually called, I wouldn't think anybody back then would be Dan. You know, I think of everything just formal.
I thought of there was one moment in this film where I it kind of caught me off guard, where Mel Gibson goes, "Hell yeah!" I was like, "Have you guys always said that?" It didn't seem right.
And it's another thing. I'll be brief here, where we don't know exactly how people talk because there are no recordings. Yeah. But I have seen things from linguists and historians that have said basically the non-rhotic R's, which is like water. Like water would be a rhotic R. I think I'm correct on that. I may have it there. The non-rhotic R's of the British, like water, stuff like that, was not until the 19th century. Like that was a 19th century thing where a lot of posh and upper crust English, British sought to separate themselves from it.
Right.
And I've actually seen it to where during the colonists, right here, the American Revolution, that the British in the American Revolution spoke more like modern day Americans, and the colonists of the time spoke like more modern day British. I've actually seen that posited.
Oh,
I know. And it's just like, it's because here they're all these South Carolina, they're talking like they some country folk here. And I'm like, come on now. Like, mm-hmm. I get it. It's for an American audience in 2000.
Yes. Yeah. I do love, like, I find it really interesting, like linguistics and like language and how it all develops and everything. Cause I just love when people get distraught about, you know, potentially changing a pronoun or something. They're like, you can't just change a language. And I'm like, dude,
yeah, the fuck you can.
First of all, languages are made up. It's not a science. It's just this noise that we've collectively decided means something.
Everything gets made up. Slang
exactly.
is made
Everything
up.
Is made up. And language evolves all the time anyway. Like, we don't speak like, you know, how people in Shakespearean spoke.
Middle English, yes.
Exactly. It's totally different. So I just love it when people say that, because I'm just like, that is the dumbest fucking thing you ever said.
Yes. And to me, it was also, I think, is Kent and Cornwall, is that west of England?
So Kent is southeast. That's where
okay.
I'm
Is Cornwall
from,
west?
Cornwall is southwest, yeah.
Okay. I saw something there, and please correct me if I'm wrong, if you know, that it was in the west of England that it is rhotic R's, that they will say water.
They have a very funny accent, like the west.
But it's funny and it's more American, right? Mm-hmm.
I can't think of somebody who is an example. But yeah, they it's more like a country talk, but not your kind of country.
No, but it's just like, I get caught up in times as well of it being like, okay, you know, like Cockney, like that's Cockney, but all of England would be like water, you know, like water or something like
water.
That.
Yeah.
That, but it's like, it's not true that there are places that'll say like, yeah, a bottle of water. And it's just, oh, that's weird. But it's so fucking stupid because that's like saying that Americans would all speak the same. And it's just like, nah, it kind of depends. But also what you said earlier about how like how things change is basically the late 1800s, the early 1900s, I'd say, without question, that we have audio recordings. So from now on, we're going to have what every single dialect is in perfect capture. And so we will know 200 years, if we still exist, 200, 300, 400 years from now, we will have what it sounded like in suburban Dallas-Fort Worth in the year 2000, in 1920, and then in 1990, and then in 2184. We will have this, and we will be able to see how it changes. And then because we have social media and mass media, I do think everything is going to eventually, become into one kind of amalgamation of a large metropolitan area.
I think so, because we already have it here where like kids here sound American if they are watching loads of American YouTube videos, loads of American shows.
TikTok.
It wasn't so much when I was younger, like me and my friends used to put on American accents all the time when we were messing around because we'd learn it on the TV. But now kids are watching that so young that they are actually picking up that accent in their everyday speech.
I heard people say that about Peppa Pig.
Yeah, Peppa Pig's like an absolute nightmare.
That they've had like Americans, that their kid will be obsessed with it and they'll be watching that all the time and then they'll start fucking talking like it. I'm like, oh my God, that is
Peppa Pig is a little Well, I've heard this from all my mates that have got kids. Apparently, she's a total bitch.
And then there's that, like how
she's a brat.
It'll be some things and they'll start talking and they'll kind of pick up
behave like Peppa Pig.
They'll pick up the mannerisms. And it's like, what a nightmare to raise children.
Yes, who are taking like behavioral from a pig.
Yes. Why are you from a 7 foot pig, apparently? Apparently, Peppa Pig's like 7 feet tall. Yeah. Okay. More history. Are you ready for more history? Yeah. So, Daniel Morgan. So, this right here is basically the Battle of Cowpens. I saw it mixed with something else, but this is the Battle of Cowpens, the absolute turning point in the Southern theater in the Carolinas campaign. Daniel Morgan was the leader. Okay. And this was interesting because I thought about this as I was watching it. I was like, throughout military history, you have all of these things. Obviously, Napoleon fucking wrote the book on everything about it. But I'm like, nobody will ever consider George Washington a tactical genius or brilliant. You will not study George Washington. The only thing would be crossing the Delaware. But it was just like all he did was like sneak attack some drunk, sleeping Germans on Christmas Day. And it was this whole thing of just staying alive. There was nothing he did tactically. Historian John Buchanan wrote, Daniel Morgan at Cowpens may have been the only general in the American Revolution on either side to produce a significant original tactical thought. And it's because of this battle at Cowpens. And I remembered it. If you'd asked me about that, I'd be like, oh, yeah, the Battle of Cowpens, a double envelopment. This is the pincer maneuver. This is the only one attempted of the war. And this right here was so strangely accurate that he actually used this militia at the center of his army. And he said two shots, just like Mel Gibson says right here. And the idea was have the militia show up, have the British and Tarleton. It was Tarleton was the actual leader there. And it was basically be like, oh, fuck, there's the militia. They're going to run because every single time in the North with Washington everywhere, as soon as the fighting happened, that militia ran like shit. Yeah. And the thing was, have the militia fire two volleys and then run. And they went over a hill. And then eventually what they did was called, I think it's like a rope-a-dope. In boxing, Muhammad Ali had this thing called the rope-a-dope. You're not stopping an attack. You're not blocking it. You're absorbing it. And so you're letting them overextend. So you're absorbing this attack, this cavalry charge. And then eventually it gets too long. And then you pincher. That's the double envelopment. Like a pincher, you pincher and you close it off. And sure enough, at this battle, Tarleton's had like a 90% casualty rate. They were fucking destroyed.
Yeah, I thought I did enjoy this last scene because, again, it's just something quite different compared to any battle scene I've seen in a movie before.
Yeah.
And
really good. Yeah, I thought it was really good.
It was really good. And then it had a few like completely ridiculous American flag shots, which I equally loved as well.
Okay. The whole thing where Mel Gibson has to literally rally them around the flag.
Oh, yeah.
No, this battle was an absolute ass kicking. Okay. From the whole time. But it was a huge major battle. Are you ready for this? Like the casualties, like how staggering they can be.
Okay.
Okay. So this is it. So on the colonist side, on the Americans, this is how many died. 25. That's it. 25 people. That's it. 25 people. I mean, shit.
You
that's
went
more...
like this.
I know. I held it because people were like, is he going to say 25?
You said 1,000.
25,000. No, 25 killed. I'm like, shit, that's like a normal school shooting nowadays.
Call the cops.
That, okay. I held back on I think me taking, I put a couple really crass jokes in Discord yesterday. And I don't know if it's me being sick these last few days, but I've really thought of some really, what I think, clever, but really dark gallows humor jokes. Okay.
Do you know what's weird? When I'm sick, I say really fucking weird stuff.
Okay. Then
not necessarily crass, but it's like my head's not there, but I will just come out with weird shit. And I'm like, yeah, that's not normal. That's
dude, I had I had the one in Discord where somebody said like Red Lobster is going bankrupt.
I saw this. I was like, what is he doing?
Red Lobster is very popular in the Black American community. So I put in there that that was the worst news since the Dred Scott decision.
I didn't know what that was. And I was like, I'm not Googling it.
For those that don't know the Dred Scott decision, I believe that was in 1857, which determined that runaway slaves in the North had to be sent back to the South. I know. And I'm like, you know what? I've got all this, but I consider them clever and gallows humor. Keep in mind, if you thought that was offensive or uncouth, remember, there was one earlier that I did not say.
Yeah, so there was one I'm going to ask about that.
The only thing is, here's the thing. I would have said it, except right after I gave that really heartfelt, choked up speech.
Yeah.
About, I'm like, I cannot say that. I can't do that thing that I bag on movies for having a real heartfelt moment. And then 10 seconds later being like, hey, how about this, you know, funny quip? I'm like, I can't
that. Would
that.
Have been so Michael Bay of you.
That would have been so goddamn Marvel-y Michael Bay of me. Okay. But eventually I'll get all of the historical stuff out of here. It was after this battle, like they say, this ended fighting basically in South Carolina. It sent Cornwallis into North Carolina and eventually did send him north to the very end when we will get. But yes, the him impaling the horse,
oh,
I will
my God.
Never forget. The only way that it could have been, quote, worse is if he literally would have impaled Tavington on it. And then he's somehow the flag is flying through his corpse.
Yes, that would have been like the perfect ending to this movie. Yeah, I mean, I didn't know how it was going to go because they've been setting up Isaac's versus dad for a long time in the past 2 hours, and we finally get it, and it's kind of epic, and it's almost like a joust. They're just running towards each other, and I didn't know how it was going to go. And yeah, the horse gets it, and I just wrote it in capitals, USA, USA.
USA, USA. Yeah, all right, and so it's over, the colonists win, and we do get Vive la France, Vive la Liberté.
Vive la Liberté.
Vive la Liberté. Yeah, we're going to cut off our king's head in 12 years.
Woo!
And there's your Liberté. More so than the fucking American Revolution, because the French Revolution will almost immediately, once the fucking, you know, the council and all that take over, they will abolish slavery because it does violate the Declaration of the Rights of Man and the Citizen.
Mm.
But then Napoleon will reinstitute slavery in Haiti because he needs money. Yeah, fuck Napoleon for that. And then he'll get his ass handed to him by Toussaint Louverture in the only successful slave rebellion in history, the nation of Haiti.
Oui, oui.
Vive la France. And then the United States will spend the next 200 years keeping them as the poorest country in the Western Hemisphere, including militarily occupying them for over 20 years in the early 20th century.
USA.
USA. That's USA. USA. All right. So the final battle here is the Siege of Yorktown, where Lord Cornwallis will surrender to George Washington with the Marquis de Lafayette is there. And the French Navy and all that army led by the Conde de Rochambeau laid waste to these goddamn Brits. But it's going to bankrupt the French Empire. And then it's funny, too, because this one's 1781. The war does not technically end, I think it's the Treaty of Paris, in 1783, which officially recognized and formalized the United States of America as existing. But the French, 6 years later in 1789, we'll get the Bastille Day, and the French will literally revolt. So thank you, Louis the 16th. You will lose your head, but yay, USA, USA.
Woo, there we go.
We never could have done it without you. We could have done it without you. All right. Okay, one last thing. All right, one last fucking laugh, okay? Occam, the now freed man, shows up saying, Gabriel said we could build a whole new world after the war. Nope, get your ass back on the plantation because all these motherfuckers are going to fight. Fuck you, movie. Fuck you, Patriot. You were fun to watch, but you are offensive to history.
Mm-hmm. I'm glad I didn't know that at the time. I was just blissfully unaware. I was good, God. He's decided to come back as a free man to help them.
God, he would have been snatched up and thrown on the goddamn plantation so fucking quick.
Imagine that's how they end the film, though. It wouldn't be quite so heartfelt.
That'd be the Spike Lee cut. In my cut. Okay. My throat is held up. Look, I drank enough whiskey.
You did good.
I drank enough whiskey. All right. Are you ready for the tier ranking? Do you know yours?
I don't.
Okay. I am so torn between this because I do like the fighting. The history is just terrible. It's offensively so fucking bad. Like, Bravehearts was bad, but Bravehearts was, I do think, a much better movie than this.
Yeah.
But I have a soft spot. I have a soft spot for the American Revolution, the colonies. I do have a real soft spot for Boston mainly. If this was set in Boston, I'd give it a fucking A-tier minimum just because it's American Revolution set in Boston. It is watchable. It's too fucking long. Heath Ledger. Oh, it gets sad every time I see Heath Ledger. I'm going to say I'm torn between a B and a C, and the B would recommend it. But you know what? I can't recommend it, as I said to my girlfriend, like, it's not worth watching. So I'm going to say this is a C tier. It's fuck. You just heard me talk about 2 hours. I didn't say anymore. C tier.
Yeah, I was thinking C as well, to be honest, because as much as I enjoyed parts of it, there was also a lot of times where I really struggled to focus on it because it's just so long and like so much going to this place. And then, but I agree with you. I did enjoy the battles because I thought they were quite unique.
Jason Isaacs. S tier.
Yeah. I mean, S tier for him for sure. And enjoy Mel Gibson's performance, even though it's kind of, you know, weird, but I really loved Braveheart. Like, I don't know why that one struck a chord with me so much more. Maybe it's because it's like Scottish and I live like 20 minutes from Scotland.
You live right next door.
Yeah. So, I loved Braveheart. I didn't love this. And if somebody said to me, should I watch it? I'd be like, nah.
But you can see Mel Gibson's charisma. Like, you get it, right?
I do enjoy watching his films.
That's what I mean.
In films, yeah.
That's what I'm. But it's so much in like the movie Maverick. Oh, I'd love for you to watch Maverick, a nice little western where I get where it's just like the dude just has fucking charisma, man. And it's easy to, again, when you separate the actor from the person, to be like, oh, okay, all right. Well, the Patriot C tier. All right, again, rate and review anywhere you get this podcast, please, if you have not done so already. Check out patreon.com/onthepath. Check out all that extra stuff as well as stuff to come. All the socials and everything below. Lucy, where can we find you?
You'll find me at Lucy J. Robin all over the internet.
All right, you can find me on Discord in there ranting, raving about anything and everything. Okay, we end History Month. It comes to a close. We wrap up that scroll next month with 2000. Oh, we're going back to 2000. I'm sorry. We're staying in the year 2000.
Yay!
With the best picture winner, Ridley Scott's Gladiator.
Yes. I'm excited for that. First time watch, sort of.
Yes, that's right. It is the first time I watched this in theaters. I dragged my mom to see it. She did not want to see it. But I came out of it being like, it was okay. And she was in love with the movie and a 2000 era Russell Crowe.
Let's go. I'm excited for this one.
Yeah. So I have not seen this movie. God damn. I don't know if I've seen it since then. Seen clips, of course. I've seen that opening a lot. I think I might have shown it in world history class and talk about what was right and wrong about the Romans in there. So yes, next week, April ends. You will learn about what May is about. And we'll see ya.
We'll see ya.